Okay, we're continuing the Gemara, Makas Yud Amid Aleph. And it's frozen, but we could read a little bit over here. So after discussing the six Ir HaMiklots, the six cities of refuge, three on the east bank, three on the west bank, and then we discussed why there was the certain positioning of certain Ir HaMiklots, because there was a greater preponderance of murderers. Okay, so now we're asking questions, and then we also mentioned there's 42 other Ir HaMiklots that are cities of Levim, and they said there's a difference between the 6 and the 42, that the 6 will be collate, will absorb the person, even if he's not aware that it does, while the 42 you have to be aware. So now the Gemara is going to ask about the facts and the names of the 6 cities, and are indeed those 6 cities, cities of refuge. And we start by asking on Chevron. Gemara asks, "V'chevron ir hamiklotu? Are you telling me one of the ir hamiklot is Chevron?" V'haksiv, let's take a look at a pasuk and say for Yeshua when Yeshua distributed parts of the land of Israel. The pasuk says, "V'haksiv v'yitnu lecholev," and they gave to Kolev, who is from the tribe of Yehuda, as Chevron. They gave him Chevron, kasher diber Moshe, as Moshe had spoken. Now, Kolev being from the tribe of Yehuda, so how could the city of refuge, where they we say they were Levite cities, how could Chevron been a city of refuge? Can't be a city of refuge if it's given out to Yehuda as a tribal portion for Yehuda, when they're supposed to be Levite cities. Some rabbi, Abayar says, well, you know, have you heard of suburbs? Parvadoha. When we talk about giving Kolev Chevron, it was Chevron's surrounding areas. The city itself, right, where do you guys live? In Toronto? Or when you go to Israel, they say, where are you from? You say you're from Thornhill?
No.
You say you're from Toronto,
yeah.
Right? But you're not in Toronto. But that's...
Unless you go to Ramat Bishayim.
Okay, fine. But yes. But however, so he was in the Parvadoha. He was in the surrounding areas. The city itself was a city of refuge. The city itself belonged to Levim. But to the villages and the open areas that surrounded it, okay, that's called the villages of Chevron. And they were given to Kolev. How do we know that? How can we prove that? Because it says in Sheis for Yoshua, what does it say? The es sedei ha'ir, and the fields of the city, ves chatzera, and its open areas, nasnu l'kolev ben yifinu, they gave to Kolev. Why didn't you say Chevron? That would have been a simple answer. Okay, so that answers the first ir hamiklot, yeah?
Just a quick question. Were these 6 cities walled cities? Or were they... Not
good question.
Don't have to be.
They're not wall.
Any reason why?
No, I'm just wondering. It's like, it's that way you know, like, oh, this is like the boundary of the city and like the outskirts like this.
No.
They're not wall.
Next. So now we go to another city. V'kedesh Ir HaMiklot. He is Kedesh in Ir HaMiklot. Which one was the Kedesh one? Which one was Kedesh? The one on top, the one on the north in Naphtali. Okay, you see the little house over there? Okay, so the one up north was Kedesh Ir HaMiklot. V'aksiv, it writes again in Yoshua, V'ore Miftzor, and the fortified cities were Hatsidim, these are names of cities, Tser, V'chamas, Rakas, the Kineres, etc. The Kedesh, that's the city. The Edrei, the Ein Chatzor. So about 8 cities listed. Okay, we have to see what the context is in a minute. But one of them is Kedesh. Okay, now what do we know about those cities? Okay, and they are called fortified cities. Okay, these are fortified cities. So Kedesh is a fortified city. Now we're going to discuss a brisa that discusses the nature of the Ari Miklot, and we're going to see why this is going to be a problem. Ve'etanya, and was taught in a brisa, Arim Halalim, these cities of refuge, Ein Osinoso Lo Tirin Kitanim, they shouldn't be made from small villages. Okay, now Rashi here seems to understand this ruling as referring only to the six Arya Miklat, while in Erchin it appears it's all 48. Okay, that's fine. Either way, an Arya Miklat should not be too small of a city, below Krachim Gedolim, and not too large of a city, not like New York City. Ella Ayoros Beinonis. They should be medium-sized cities. All right, why? Small cities don't have enough supplies to provide for the people's needs. Big cities attract all kinds of people, and a Goel Hadam can slip into the city undetected. Right? Big cities, you don't know who's coming and going. So you need an average-sized city so there's enough to supply the needs of the people. But if a stranger comes in, you're able to notice a stranger as well. Now, if you want to say Kedesh is an Arya Miklat, but it's referred to as a fortified city, and therefore it would appear it couldn't be a city of refuge, because that would seem it's like a big city. Fortified city is a big city. So therefore it doesn't make sense. So we're going to have to give a similar type of answers we gave before. Amar of Yosef, or Yosef says, Tarte Kedesh Havai. There are two cities that are named Kedesh, and one is in Arya Miklat, and one was a fortified city. As how do we know that? Omer Rav Ashi, Rav says, for example, there's another situation like that. Could go on Silikum, the Akrod Silikum. There's a place called Silikum, and it's a place called the Village of Silikum. In other words, Silikum was a large fortified city with a medium-sized suburb nearby known as the Village of Silikum. The same situation as in Kedesh. There was a large fortified city that name, and a mid-sized town nearby bearing the same name. The latter was the Arya Miklat, the city of refuge. Okay, so it was a medium-sized city. Okay, those seem to be the only two cities there was any questions of them being the correct city. We've resolved that. Now we're going to go back to that Brisa that we just quoted, and now we're going to have a fuller version of that Brisa. Gufa, the Brisa we just quoted about the size of the Arya Miklat. So let's go back and let's give the full presentation of that Brisa. First part we know. Arim alo, these cities, ain't osino, some lo tirin ketan. You don't make an Arya Miklat a small village, velo krachim goli, and not large cities. Now we continue, eriris benos, medium size. So that we've already understand. Now we're continuing with the Brisa. Ve moshivino, some ela bimkom maim. And we don't establish them except where there's water. That's an important thing, to have water. Without water, it's not good. The main shamaim, what if there is no water? Mevilamaim, we bring them water. Mean to say, if the city has no natural water supply, fell to the Levites through the lots. Remember, Yeshua did the lotteries. So these were the Levite cities. So they don't have any water, natural water. So they have to dig canals to bring water to it, even from a distant river. The same was true if the water supply dried up. As noted above, it was the response of the courts to ensure the proper functioning of the cities of refuge. Thus, if a refuge lacked water, it was the public responsibility to provide it with an adequate water supply. Okay, what else? Vein moshivin olson elabamakam shvakim. And we don't establish them except where there are marketplaces, so provisions are readily available. Vein moshivin olson elabamakam uchlosan. And we put them in places where there are population centers nearby. Why do you need that? In other words, this means nearby is a big city, but not in the Arya Miklat, a big city. Why? Well, we said the Arya Miklat is an average size. You know, it's interesting. There was this YouTube going around. I forgot where it was. I think somewhere. I think it was in Philadelphia. I could be wrong. It was a heavily black populated city. So there's one of these Walgreens. So Walgreens, middle of the night, 60 black youth decide to go in and have some fun. It's all on video. And they just, 60 of them, they just walk into the Walgreens. Now, how many people do you think are working at Walgreens like at 11 o'clock at night? You know, a handful. And they're going in, and they're going in and just throwing things off the counter, throwing things around, stealing things in and out. It was like, go in for 3-4 minutes, and as fast as they came in, they came out. And like people in Walgreens, what are they going to do? And by the time you call the police, then they come. Forget it. They're all gone. They only caught it on video cam. So what's the point? Why did I bring it up? Because, you know, if you have an average size here in Mikla, so the goal at Dom, he'll bring a mercenary group, and they'll just walk in, and they'll get the job done. So therefore, what do we have to have? We have to have a population city nearby. Why? So if the Gaul Dom would want to attack, there's protection from these people. They'll call the other, if they see they're coming, they'll call the other city. You can't be in a heavily populated area, the Mir Miklat, because then they could infiltrate. But you want one nearby to provide protection from potential Gaul Dom, because you could see a Gaul Dom will say, I'm going to kill, we're not going to let you. He'll bring in 50 guys, they'll walk in, kill the guy, and leave. So this way, if you have nearby, you can, so to speak, have people to help out.
I thought they were accompanied by two.
That's while he's there, but now that's why he's going there. Now he's living there.
Oh, so he's already.
He's living. Goldam's there, so the relatives will want to kill him, and they're not allowed to. But who's going to stop him? There, it's in a medium-sized village, not a large village. You're not talking about tens of thousands of people. You need enough to provide your resources, and small enough we could detect strangers. So he comes in with 50 people, you can't stop him. So you have a city nearby, they knew their job was to help them out. Now what happens if Nismatu Ochloseim? What if the surrounding area's population diminishes? So Mosifin Aleim, we have to add to them, so there's enough people over there that can help them out. What if Nismatu Dioreim? What if the inhabitants of the city of refuge itself become diminished? That means there's not enough for commerce and things like that. Mevim Lahem Kohanim Levim Yisrael. We bring in an influx of population of Kohanim Levim in Yisrael. We clearly know, but not just any old people, but people they know have good midos. You don't just say, well, we're having cheap housing, and then all the low life and riffraff come into the city, because that's not the point. We want it to be a good a city. Okay, they will not be party to injustice, and be justice not to turn an exile over to the Gaul Adam. Remember, again, there could be certain pressures that the Gaul Adam could exercise over these cities. Mm-hmm. So you have to have people of integrity that will resist those overtures. And more than that, as you recall, I mentioned way back in the beginning, the whole point of the, what's the word I'm looking for? The tikkun you want to make for the person who killed as the unintentional murderer is for him to be more sensitive to other people's needs. Usually a person who's very careful generally will not kill anyone b'shogeg. Remember, there's accidents, but shogeg. Shogeg means there's a degree of negligence. So if you're a little degree of negligence, that means you don't have enough care for other people. So the tikkun, the correction for this person, is live in a city that people care about other people. So therefore, you have to bring in the right quality of people to live in that city. So after people of integrity. Okay, so you repopulate the Ir HaMiklat. What else? Other things you do to protect the people who are in there. They mocher behem, and they don't sell in the local hardware stores in the Ir HaMiklat, lo kli zayin, velo kli mitsuda. You don't sell weapons or hunting gear. Because then a goal of them just going, can I buy myself a rifle, please? How long do you need it for? Just for a couple hours. Right? So you don't sell those things. Divrei Reb Nechemia. That's Reb Nechemia's position. V'chachamim on the other and matirim. They agree. I guess they're not concerned for that. Because the people there, I guess, have to make a living. They need to defend themselves and whatever. However, v'shavim, but they agree. They both agree that traps cannot be laid in the cities or ropes spun within them. Why? Kidei shelo tehe regel gol adam mitzuyim sham. So the redeemer of blood should not have an excuse to be there. In other words, trapping is not permitted in Eira Mikla because it attracts numerous people to the area, enabling a Goel Adam to enter unnoticed. Orach Lener explains that the making of ropes was also an industry that attracted large numbers of people. In those days, I guess making ropes. In other words, don't sell things that are attracting a lot of people to the city. Moreover, trappers tend to have weapons with them, and allowing the presence of trappers would thus allow the Goel Adam to enter the city with weapons. Okay, that's the end of the Braisa. So you see from the Braisa, it's discussing various things we have to do to ensure the safety of Goel Adam, and also the fact that they have what they need. That's the end of the Braisa. Gemara now is going to look from the sources for some of these laws that were mentioned in the Braisa. Amar Rav Yitzchak, for example, what's the pasuk that teaches us all these laws that we have to provide a safe environment for the Goel Adam, for the people who killed B'shogeg? It says, the person who kills unintentionally, v'nos, he will flee el achas mina erim ha'el, to one of these cities. Now, obviously, why is he fleeing? So the guy won't kill him. So why do you got to say the next word? V'choy, and he lives. What else is he supposed to do? Die? Right? He flees to the city, and it's understood. He will not be killed. Why are you saying, and he will live? The answer is, Ovid le'midi, provide for him things, t'tahav le'chayus, that will allow him to live. So all these things allow the kills b'shogeg to live. Good. Now that we've discussed that we have to allow him to live, the Gemara now just shifts a little bit. Okay, he's got to live, so we got to provide other things, and this can create very interesting situations. Tana, we learn in a Braisa when it says that life in this context can mean not just living with food and water and population, this and that, but now we see a different way of looking at this. Talmid Shagola, let's say a student in a yeshiva killed someone unintentionally. So he has to go to the Eira Mikla, right? But somebody else has to. Magalin Rabo Imo, his Rebbe has to go into exile with him too.
Teach him.
Yeah, Shinemar, because the Pasuk says, V'chai, and he shall live. And Ovid Le Midi Ditahavi Le Chayusa. You have to do things that enable him to live. And a student cannot survive without the one who teaches him Torah. Rambam says, to those who seek the wisdom of the Torah, living without studying is equivalent to death. Ritfos states that this law applies even if there is an academy in place in the city of refuge, for not every student merits to study successfully under every teacher. Mm-hmm. Right? Everyone, this teacher, his teaching resonates. The other one doesn't. This is his Rebbe, then that's what he has to learn from. Wow. So now, look at the next line. So now I know you're upset. What do you mean? The Rebbe now's got to move?
All the people left behind, all the students.
Well, yes. Well, I guess the whole yeshiva has to move.
Wow.
You know? I mean, that would appear. So you can say, wait a minute, that's not fair. So Reb Zera says, listen, protect yourself. Amar Reb Zera. Reb Zera says, Mikan, from this little teaching we just said, we learn from here, Shlo Yeshana Adam LeTalmud She'ena Hogum. You shouldn't have a disciple who has bad character. Because usually, remember, a person kills B'shogeg, it's not a person killed B'ones. Shogeg means he deliberately was negligent to a certain degree. That's not the kind of person you should be teaching Torah to, right? So if you took on such a student, you're asking for it. You have to be careful. You can't just take anybody on as a student.
Isn't the idea to put him on a straight path so he doesn't make these errors?
I understand.
Well, that's the whole idea of teaching, isn't it?
Right, but if he's an Eina Hogun, remember, there's people, ignorant is one thing. There's different things you could do. There's a yeshiva, and then there's a rabbi giving the pulpit drush. The yeshiva is, there's like a very close relationship going on over here. Okay? So, that already, you have entrance exams. You know, we only take into this yeshiva people of a good character. People not of a good character, let the parents teach the kid to be a mensch. And once he's a mensch, you want to come into yeshiva, you know, you have to be of a certain character. And if you're not, if a bad character, because, you know, if you teach Torah to people with a bad character, they're only going to do evil with the Torah that you teach them. All right. So again, but this is a very, we don't have this really so much nowadays. Because we don't have people who is, this is my teacher, and that's the only Torah I learn, and he shapes me and molds me. It's very rare that you find that nowadays. So, but in those days, it was a very kind of exclusive. Had a lot of Gemaras. Remember, there's one rabbi who didn't let anybody in unless his inside was like, his outside was like his inside, and the yeshiva was not that big. Mm-hmm. And when they deposed that Rosh Yeshiva, they let everybody in. So you got to be careful who you take in, because you're mamish like a spiritual father to the person. And now if that person goes and kills, you're going to have to go into goals with them. So you have to be careful who you're going to teach. Okay, now let's flip it now, guys. Amar Rav Yochanan. Now this one I'm going to have more trouble explaining. Okay? Harav Shegola. What if a rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva, is exiled?
Oh.
I don't understand this. Megalan Yeshivaso Imo. The whole academy is exiled.
Yeah.
All right? Well, he doesn't bring down the commentaries over here. Okay? So that's already hard to understand, because of what kind of Rosh Yeshiva was he. We just said the student, you have to be careful who you take in as a student. Now we're going to say, no, you have to be careful who your Rebbe is now. Okay, anyway, that's it.
Or maybe if he taught them, maybe they're all these guys are also in the same boat with him. They're going to kill other people too. So don't want to take a chance with the students also.
Yeah, but the Rebbe, it's a difficult Gemara.
Yeah.
Okay. Gemara now questions why a Torah scholar would require exile. Now the Gemara asks a different question. I understand if these guys are learning Torah, shouldn't the Torah be protecting them?
Yeah.
Amy, how could this be? V'ham, Rabbi Yochanan says, Minayin l'divrei Torah shehein koltin. How do we know that the very words of Torah provide refuge to one who studies them, and that they protect him from all evil? All right, now, so it's interesting. There's two ways of looking at this question, but it seems, well, he's studying Torah. He already has a refuge, right? Shenemar, it says, a pasuk, es Betzer Bamidbor, one of the cities designated by Moshe in the desert was the city of Betzer. Okay, what is that for anything? This is discussing the cities of refuge. Now, what does it say right after the discussion of the cities of refuge? Uksiv Basrei, it says, Vizos HaTorah, right? It says, this is the Torah that Moshe placed before the Vizos HaTorah, Asher Sam Moshe, Livnei B'nei Yisrael. And again, that Torah too is a source of refuge. That's the drasha. Just like a city of refuge protects you, Torah protects you. That's the case. Why should a teacher of Torah require the asylum of a city of refuge? Torah protects him for that alone. Now, the Gemara assumes at this point that the Torah scholar inadvertently killed the study hall will serve him as his sanctuary, and the Goldam may not kill him there. That's what the Gemara is asking in the question. It seems we're saying that Torah protects you like an Eira Miklat, right? Just like when it listed the Eira Miklat that Moshe set up. Then it says Zos HaTorah. What's that connected to the Eira Miklat? It teaches us that it would appear that a study hall protects you like an Eira Miklat.
Okay.
So why would he have to run to a city of refuge? More answers. It does, but only in a limited fashion. Lo kasha. It's not a kasha. When does Torah protect you? Ha be'idna da'asik be'. When you're studying Torah, it protects you. During Seder, it protects you. But what about when you go to sleep at night? But when you're not engaged in it, it does not protect you. That's why he has to flee to the city of refuge, because it doesn't protect him when he's not learning Torah. That's one answer. Second answer is, you know, you didn't understand the drasha properly, and Akasha wasn't Akasha to begin with. What does it mean the Torah protects you? If you want, I can give a second answer why he can't go to the academy as a city of refuge. My Colton, what does it mean? The Torah provides refuge. It means Bimalach HaMoves, from the angel of death. What does that mean? And now we're going to have a story from that. In other words, Torah study can save you from dying natural means. On the other hand, it cannot protect you from a gol adam. As we find in the, that's the answer basically. Torah protects you from sickness, this, but a guy wants to murder you, he's going to murder you. How do we know it protects you from sickness or death? Ki hadar Rav Chisda, from Rav Chisda. Have Yosef and Garim Bebe Rav. He was sitting and learning in the house of study. Vlahoya Koyokol Shlicha de Malcham of the Bov Solikar Vagabi. And it was time for him to die. The Malcham of us says today was the day to take this rabbi out of the world. He's trying to, he can't. The rabbi's studying Torah. He's got a protective shield. Mama just can't get in. You can't kill the guy when he's learning Torah.
King David.
exactly. The law have shasek pumei migirsa. His mouth didn't pause from learning the Torah. So Mama can't get him in. So Mama was a clever. What did he do? Solik, he went outside. The Yosef Arza sat on a cedar. Devei Rav, on the grounds of the house of study, on a cedar tree. Paka Arza, the cedar split, made a big noise. Boom! And Vishasik, and temporarily, Rav Chisda paused as he was distracted by the noise. Viachale, the angel of death, was able to prevail over that one little. Right? Now, it's not a punishment to this rabbi. It was his time to go. But there is a certain mechanism of how death happens, and you can't kill. Mahos cannot take a soul out while he's studying Torah. Okay, so he just finds a way to distract him. So you said, right? The Gemara in Shabbos relates an almost identical incident concerning the death of King David. Baruch Luner explains that the Gemara does not cite that incident. The question, why didn't we bring along David HaMelech? David HaMelech knew that he was going to die on a Shabbos, right? So every Shabbos in this last year of his life, he was just learning all day long. So what happened? They bring a story where there was, I think it was also something was going on outside, yeah, and or whatever, or he slipped on the thing. So why did they bring the story with David HaMelech? Why? Because it wishes to prove that Torah study protects from the angel of death even when the person studying is unaware of the dangers, mm-hmm, of his life. David knew that he was going to die and does not intend to avail himself of the protection of the Torah. Mm-hmm. David knew that he was in danger and intended the Torah should protect him. The story over here, this rabbi didn't know his time was up. I want to say, even if you don't know your time is up, right, the Torah study helps you. Okay, now, of the cities of refuge, okay, which one was the first one designated? Right? Which one was the first city of refuge designated? Of the six. Amar Rav Tamchon bar Chaniloi. Rav Tamchon, the son of Chaniloi, says, why is the tribe of Reuven counted first, the merit they have, the first one of the Ere HaMiklat listed as the first city of refuge? Remember, we first started with the three on the east bank because we had not crossed to the west bank. And of the list of the three, we have Betzer, which is the one in the lower right hand side of Reuven in the purple. See Reuven in the purple? Yeah. And there's Betzer right there. That was the first one. So why is that one the first one? Now, it's interesting. In Yehoshua, it lists the cities of refuge from north to south. And you'd figure it would be the same thing in the Transjordan. But it's not. First mentions Betzer. In other words, when we're talking about in Yehoshua, it lists them from north to south. In Sefer Dvarim, you'd figure it'd be consistent, north to south. It doesn't. It goes south to north. So there must be a reason why Hashem chose that Betzer in the tribe of Reuven should be the first one listed. So why is that one the first one listed? The answer is, Mipnei Shu Pasach Bat Solotchila, because he was the first one to try to rescue someone in the case of trying to rescue Yosef. Mm-hmm. When the brothers wanted to kill Yosef, what does it say? Shenemar, it says, Vayishma Reuven. Reuven heard, Vayatzilehu miyadam, and he saved them from their hands, right? He said, let's throw him in the pit, with the intention was to take him out afterwards, but either way, he did save his life. So since he saved his life, therefore, when we're talking about saving people's lives now, by giving refuge, we're going to start with the tribe of Reuven for that reason as well. Next, Darish Rab Simloi. Rab Simloi makes the following drasha. My dechsiv, what does it mean when the Torah says in Sefer of Eschanan, Pershus Eschanan, Oz Yavdul Moshe Shalosh Orim Be'evar Yadim Mizrach HaShemesh. Then Moshe designated three cities on the east bank. Now the last words, Mizrach HaShemesh, towards the rising sun. What's the significance of saying towards the rising sun? Right? You already said Be'ever Yardei Mizracha. Ve'har Yardein on the other side, Mizracha Shemesh, towards the rising sun. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Ma Hashem said to Moshe, Hazrach Shemesh LeRotzchim, cause the sun to shine for killers. In other words, provide their needs while they're in the exile, as already listed. In other words, provide, make sure they have a sunny outlook. Things are, they're in the sun, that means things they're taken care of. That's one interpretation. Igadami, others say, Amar Lei Hashem said to Moshe, Hizrach Hashem Asarotzim, you have caused the sun to rise for killers by separating three cities to provide for refuge. So what's the difference between the two interpretations? According to the first explanation, the phrase toward the rising sun refers to additional acts that God was directing Moshe to perform within the cities of refuge. According to the other interpretation, it was a sign of God's approval for the separation that had already been performed. In other words, either it means, okay, you're going to make the cities and make sure they can live in them, which you haven't done yet, or, very good, you've provided sunshine for them by separating the three cities for them. Okay. One more thing we'll do. Darash Rab Simoy, Rab Simoy makes an interesting drasha. Remember we said the three cities that Moshe selected were not effective until the next three were done. So the obvious question is, why did he bother making the first three if they don't work anyway? Yeah. So that's Gemara's going to address that issue. My dichsiv, what does it mean in Koheles? Ohev kesef, a person who loves money, lo yispa kesef, will not be satisfied with money or silver. Umi ohev behamon, or similarly, and whoever loves a lot, hamon means a lot, lo tavua, has no produce. What does that mean? What does the pasuk mean? It means ohev kesef lo yispa kesef, someone who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. Ze Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. What does that mean? What does silver mean here? He knew that the three cities on the east side would not provide refuge until Yehoshua would select the three on the other side of the Jordan. Right? So what does it help? But he still, nonetheless, he said, Mitzvah Shivala Yadi Ake Kayamena. The mitzvah's come into my hand, I shall fulfill it. So he fulfilled the three cities on the east side. Although they didn't actually provide refuge, still was a mitzvah to select them. Okay? So in other words, he was, just like we know, there's a certain midah. No matter how much money you have, you're not happy. Moshe, no matter how many mitzvahs I have, I'm not happy. I want more mitzvahs. That's why Hashem gave us this insatiable desire to have more. To have more spirituality. If you misguide it, then you want to have more money. So that's what it means over here, that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to have more mitzvahs, even though he doesn't get a complete credit, but at least whatever I do, a little bit is worth something. What about the second part of the pasuk? Umi ohev behamon lo sevu. Whoever loves a multitude has no produce. Meaning to say, lami no lelamed behamon. For whom is it proper to teach a multitude? Who should be the one teaching the multitudes? Misha kol tvua shalo. Someone who has a lot of produce. I mean, he's full, stocked full with chumash, mishnah, gemara. In other words, he's an expert in all areas of Torah. That's the guy who should have the multitudes. So the word lo in the pasuk here is expounded here as if it's spelled lo with a vav, to him. It's spelled like in the gemara. All right? So that's what it means, to him, not lo, not tfua, but the one who has tfua. All right, we're going to have to stop it over here. Gemara's going to continue expounding on these ideas.